Greetings, and welcome to Research on Religion, a weekly podcast series devoted to the social scientific study of religion. I'm Anthony Gill, your host, professor of political science at the University of Washington, and distinguished senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, the gracious sponsor of our podcast. We encourage you to visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org to post comments, ask questions, access additional material related to today's program, and to find out what is happening at the Institute. All right, let's begin. Before diving into our topic today revolving around evangelicals and racial attitudes, there are a few announcements we have to make about our program and our website. It recently came to my attention, actually it was announced to me by my wife, that we are living in the 21st century, and indeed, we're actually a full decade into that new century, and what that means is that it is time to engage in social networking. Wow, all right, cool. What's social networking? I had to ask my wife. Well, she responded, it's stuff like the Face page and Dig This and other things like that. And she further informed me that this will help us here at Research on Religion to expand our audience and to reach new heights of listenership. Okay, so we are now in the process of setting up a Facebook fan page for people to connect to and to become our friends. We're going to use that page to make announcements and to encourage discussion of the topics that we have here on the podcast. Now, this is going to involve you a little bit. Your job, and it is an easy one, will be to make us your friend. Especially when you see the Facebook logo appear on our homepage, just click on that, go to our Facebook fan page, and friend us. Second, we're also thinking about including other social networking features such as Dig This, Delicious, and Google Buzz, all things that I have no idea what they are, but our webmaster at Internet Imagineering, Neil Luft, is going to help us get those things up and running. And I have been informed that this is going to help us spread the word to others that you like what we're doing and will help us to build our listening audience. All right. With that said, we turn to today's topic, which is the relationship between evangelicals and racial attitudes, with a specific emphasis on whether younger white evangelicals, largely born after 1960 or so, have different attitudes toward racial minorities in the United States. Now, to figure this all out and to see what the data says, I'm excited today to be joined by Darren Mather, who holds the honor of being the first graduate student to be featured on our podcast. Now, usually we prefer to have stuffy old professors with gray hair and reading glasses, but in an effort to reach out to the youth market, that whole social networking thing, we decided to feature the research of Darren, who is currently pursuing his PhD in sociology at the University of Minnesota. Now, I came across Darren's research in an article that he published in the Interdisciplinary Journal of Research on Religion. Really liked that article quite a bit. And it was entitled, Divided by Age, Generational Shifts in White Evangelical Christians' Attitudes Toward Racial Diversity. We're going to post a link to that article on our website, which is free of charge, and actually registering for that journal, IJRR, is actually free of charge. And there's a benefit in doing that, that once you register for the Interdisciplinary Journal of Research on Religion, you're going to have free access to a number of other scholarly articles dealing with the social scientific study of religion. So it's a great resource for scholars, for homeschoolers, and for anybody interested in the topic of religion. I should also finish up here with the introduction by noting that Darren is working on a dissertation relating to gender equality in religious education in Guatemala. And if we have a bit of time at the end of the podcast, we'll see what he is up to there. Darren, welcome to Research on Religion.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, I got a first question to ask you. It's of utmost importance here. Are you a user of the Facebook?
I am not a Facebook user.
Oh my gosh, you are not socially networked, because I was going to ask if you were on Facebook, if you would make us your friend.
Well, I'd be glad to be a friend, okay. But first I need to get an account.
All right. Yeah, all of our students have Facebook accounts, by the way, and I noticed that they're very connected, and people will send me requests to be their friend and stuff. So
yeah, I actually work in instructional technology, so a lot of my colleagues and professors and students are really surprised that I don't have a Facebook account. But
oh man, it's time to get with the
trend. Haven't gone there yet.
Yeah, you got to get with the social buzz here, right?
That's right.
Okay, let's get right now to the topic at hand, which is racial attitudes among evangelical Christians, particularly the difference between the old folks and the young'uns. And now, before we get into your findings specifically, give me some idea what prompted you to study the difference in racial attitudes between these older folks, the older evangelical cohort, and the younger generation.
Sure. Well, you know, just personally, I have a lot of interest in this topic. I've lived for the last 15 years or so in a very multicultural neighborhood, so interactions, conversations with my neighbors have made me very interested in the whole issue of racial reconciliation. And then I've also worked for quite a few years at an evangelical university that's been actively working on racial reconciliation. And so that's led me to do a lot of thinking about the whole topic of race and religion and how they interact.
So what evangelical university was that?
Bethel University in St. Paul.
Okay. So you just took a short trip over to University of Minnesota to start your PhD.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And you mentioned that you live in a fairly racially diverse community in Minneapolis, I would assume, or maybe it's St. Paul.
It's actually in St. Paul.
St. Paul. And for those of our listeners who might be associating Minnesota with basically, you know, the racial differences between Norwegians and Swedes, but it is actually pretty diverse out there, right?
Yeah. In fact, not in St. Paul, but in Minneapolis, we have one of the more diverse neighborhoods in the country with all kinds of, you know, a whole variety of people living in those neighborhoods. So in my particular neighborhood, it's basically African-American, but we have a lot of Hmong, some Latinos, Vietnamese people who are living in the neighborhood as well. So we're getting more diverse here.
That's good. And it's an interesting topic, too, because as the United States becomes more and more diverse, this issue of racial reconciliation and attitudes is going to become important. So let's start thinking about how this relates to evangelicals. Now, when you talk about the older generation of evangelicals versus the younger generation, how are you dividing up those groups?
Yeah, well, I could really have divided them up in a lot of different ways. I'm interested in thinking about generational differences. So we could have talked, you know, I could have talked about the millennials versus Gen Xers versus baby boomers versus the World War II generation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran into a problem that researchers often run into, and that my sample size was just too small to be able to slice things too thinly. So I decided to really focus on a difference between people who were baby boomers and before, and those who were born after the baby boom. So basically, people who were born before 1957 compared to those who were born after 1957. So, and that's kind of an arbitrary division. People would say, hey, how can we say that somebody born in 1956 is that different from somebody born in 1958? You know, clearly there's not going to be a difference that's that fine. But I think there's lots of reasons for us to think about why people born before the 60s would be different from people who were born in the 60s and afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So. I mean, that time that you're talking about there really is at the height of the civil rights movement, and so that becomes a large historical dividing time in our history. So people born in 1960, 1961, by the time they reach general social consciousness and understand what's going on in the world around them, they would have already have seen the civil rights movement have its impact after that, whereas those folks beforehand would have really been seeing it take place and have different attitudes before then, I would guess.
Right, yeah, the whole civil rights thing, and then just there's a lot more emphasis on diversity and tolerance in schools and the media and society at large. And then, you know, as we were just talking about, the country is becoming a lot more diverse. And even in rural areas, we're seeing more and more diversity. So mm-hmm. people born after this time have just a much greater likelihood of growing up with, you know, rubbing shoulders with people who are different from them.
Mm-hmm.
So just having that extra contact and that extra exposure to people from different races could very well make a big difference in how people understand race.
So that gives us an indication of the youth versus the older generation. Now, what do you mean by the term evangelical? We've discussed this on the in the past on our podcast, and that definition of evangelical sometimes is difficult to define. How do you define it and measure it?
Yeah, it can be very squishy, and there's lots of debates about that. What I've decided to do for this study was use a classification system that was developed by Brian Steensland and his co-authors. And basically, they have used people's denominational affiliation. So are you Southern Baptist or Evangelical Free or something like that? Take that, your denomination, to determine whether people are evangelical or not. And this is by no means a perfect classification system, but it's one that's actually pretty widely accepted in the social sciences, and that's what I decided to employ in this study.
Yeah, and it's a very reasonable measure, as we've talked about on previous podcasts, because if you're in a certain type of denomination, Assemblies of God or something, you're more likely to have evangelical leanings than somebody, say, in the Presbyterian Church, or obviously who's not affiliated with any religious denomination at all, or not affiliated with religion at all. But again, it's not a perfect correlation. There, people have found evangelical types in the Presbyterian Church and non-evangelical types. But again, it's a pretty good approximation of what we're doing there.
Right. And they try to differentiate, say, between Evangelical Lutheran Church of America and the Missouri Synod and different things like that. So it's not just broadly Lutherans and Baptists, because there are evangelical Baptists and non-evangelical Baptists as well.
Right. Okay, so and you're using mostly the General Social Survey when you're culling information or data, correct?
No, I'm actually using data that was gathered through the University of Minnesota. It's the American Mosaic Project.
Aha! Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a two-piece project. There's a large qualitative piece where people went to different festivals and talked to different community organizers, etc. But the main part of this survey that was conducted not quite 10 years ago was a national random digit survey of about 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And really focused on, you know, issues of people's sense of solidarity, people's ideas about diversity, mainly racial and religious solidarity and diversity. So kind of the focus of that survey.
And that's good to know. A lot of people that we've talked with on this podcast series before have used the General Social Survey. And in fact, our podcast last week on happiness actually culled data from there. But this is a survey that's really designed to get much more at religious affiliation, religious beliefs, attitudes, and racial attitudes as well in terms of this. So definitely pulling some good information from this. Now, tell us about your findings, kind of the top-line findings that you have here. When it comes to the difference in racial attitudes between the older generation of evangelicals and the younger generation of evangelicals, what do you find?
Well, I actually did find that there were some differences between the two, and when I started this project, I wasn't necessarily expecting that I would find differences.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, we find that younger evangelicals place a lot higher value on diversity, especially on having diverse friendships than older evangelicals. And they also tend to have a greater sense of solidarity with racial minorities than older evangelicals do.
What do you mean
by... That's probably the main finding.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by racial solidarity? How do you define that?
Well, there's a sense of commonality between them. And I have a very specific measure for that, which asks, do you share the same vision of society as African Americans or Hispanics or Asian Americans? So it's looking at that, sharing a similar vision of society to talk about cohesion or solidarity.
Now we'll come back a little bit to talk about the specific results there, but it's a good idea just to get a sense of what do you mean by that term. Now you also compared younger evangelicals to younger non-evangelicals, is that correct?
That's right.
And within that younger non-evangelical category, we're talking about the non-evangelical denominations as well as just people who don't go to church.
That's correct.
Okay. So what are your findings there? How do younger evangelicals compare to non-evangelicals when it comes to their racial attitudes?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to do the second comparison between younger evangelicals and non-evangelicals, because I really wanted to see if the changes that I did find were mainly related to broader generational shifts that were occurring, or if there is something distinctive about evangelicalism that might be driving these changes. So the interesting thing that I found in this study is that younger evangelicals, they basically mirror, they have almost the same ideas and attitudes as other people their age when it comes to issues of valuing diversity and their whole sense of solidarity with minority groups. But there's also a difference there. The younger evangelicals are different from younger non-evangelicals when it comes to issues about social policy and racial social policy and issues. And it's kind of interesting on this area, their younger evangelicals are more likely to align with older evangelicals when we think about racial public policy.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of your work that you found is in contrast to some of the previous studies that were out there that did find differences between younger evangelicals and non-evangelicals. So how do you compare or contrast with some of the other research that's been out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, mainly you're thinking a little bit about some of Withnow's findings. He did some research on how they felt about having a stronger presence of people from a Hispanic background or from an Asian background in the United States. And he found that evangelicals were less open than other Americans to having a stronger presence of minorities in their neighborhoods and in their communities. So that seems to contradict some of my findings that they have a shared sense of vision. So it's a little hard to tease that one out. I'm wondering if they do share a common sense of vision about a broader sense of what America is about, but when it comes to some more specific values, they might have some differences, so they might not want to be in contact with them. So that's a speculation that I have. I'm not really sure. We need to tease that out a little bit more.
Yeah, now was Withnow basically lumping all evangelicals together, or did he do a generational split?
He did not do a generational split.
Yeah. And so maybe that's the difference in the findings, is that what you are really picking up is a changing attitudinal position by younger generations, and
yeah,
if he tends to be interviewing older people in the sample that he has, that's going to lead to some different conclusions here.
You know, I need to take that back. He did do a generational split because his whole work was focused on younger evangelicals, younger generations.
Okay.
So he was comparing the younger to the younger.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your measures that you are dealing with here in determining racial attitudes. What are the kind of metrics that you're using to figure out how somebody's racial attitudes are set up?
Well, in this paper, I basically used 8 different dependent variables in 3 different models. So first I had some models that looked at people's overall value for diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So it asked questions like, do you value having people who are different from you in your community? Do you value having diverse friendships? And so just general sense of, do you value diversity? Then I had a second set of models that used 3 variables on this whole social solidarity thing that we've already talked about. So do they share the same vision as with American society as African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, etc.? So, and then finally I had a set of variables that look more specifically at issues related to inequality and racial public policy. And for these questions, they focus specifically on African Americans and policy toward African Americans, ideas about African Americans. They asked if African Americans fare worse economically because of a lack of effort or hard work. And I thought this question was really important to include because it kind of gives a general sense as to whether or not people attribute racial inequality to more individual issues. It's whether somebody's working hard or not, are they putting in the effort, or does it relate, are there some other broader social issues, structural issues out there that might be affecting things? And then the last 2 questions that I used to develop these models focus more on affirmative action? Should special considerations for job hiring and school admissions be given to African Americans? And then should the government provide more economic assistance to African Americans as a way to alleviate social inequality? So basically those three areas, looking at valuing diversity, a sense of solidarity, and then what we should do about public policy and dealing with inequality.
Okay, so let's go ahead and walk through each of those categories of things you're trying to explain, or dependent variables, as us fancy sociologists like to call them. And let's start with the comparison between the older evangelicals and their kids or their grandkids on the measures of valuing diversity and racial tolerance. And now I'm primarily looking at your first couple tables here in your paper. Now, that's not available to our listening audience right now, and especially if they're driving in the car, we don't want them to, you know, look at these tables or anything, but they are available free of charge on the IJRR website, and we'll post those to you. So what do you see when it comes to the comparison of older evangelicals and younger evangelicals on the issues of valuing diversity?
Yeah, when you compare them head-to-head, you really find out that younger evangelicals are definitely more likely than older evangelicals to put a strong value on diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And this really comes through in the area of having diverse friendships. Only about 57% of older evangelicals, so a little more than half, say they really value having friendships with diverse people. Then that number, if you look at younger evangelicals, it jumps all the way up to 73%, so almost three-quarters who say, yeah, it's important to me to have diverse friendships in my life. So there's really a big difference there. These head-to-head comparisons, when you look at them also, you see there's a big difference in the idea of racial solidarity. So across the board, when we look at African-Americans, Hispanics, Asians, the younger evangelicals are much more likely to say they share the same vision of society with these groups.
Mm-hmm.
Than you would see in the responses from the older evangelicals.
Now, what's interesting about that, and I'm looking at your tables here, and again, I encourage people to download your paper and take a look at this for themselves. When it comes to the questions of do you value community diversity, the evangelicals, both young and old, the percentages were pretty high in
yeah.
terms of that. The younger evangelicals, about 96%, 97% said they value community diversity, and about 89% or so of older evangelicals felt the same way. So those numbers are quite high. And as you mentioned, with valuing diverse friendships, you still had more than half, about 57% or so of older evangelicals valuing having friends from diverse cultures or ethnicities or races. And younger evangelicals were up around three-quarters or 72-73%. When it comes to the issue of racial solidarity, these numbers drop a little bit. And in terms of sharing the vision with others, so when it comes to do you share the vision of African-Americans, younger evangelicals, only about 48%, so roughly half, have that shared vision. This is pretty true across Hispanics and Asians as well, roughly about half. Whereas older evangelicals, they're down kind of near about a third, 36%, 35% in that range of sharing visions in that area. Any speculation on what that difference is? I share a different vision of the world than African-Americans or Hispanics, but yet they score very highly on community diversity and having diverse mm-hmm. friendships.
Yeah, I guess I'm not really that surprised about the idea about valuing diversity in the community in general,
mm-hmm.
but I still don't share the same vision as those people have. It is a little bit interesting that people at relatively higher rates, especially for the younger evangelicals, value having diverse friendships, but then they're less likely to say, you know, I share the same vision as African Americans or Hispanics or Asians.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this might be also in the variable wording. These first two questions are about diversity more broadly. So people can define that in a lot of different ways. And these latter questions look more specifically at African Americans, Hispanics, and Asians. So
mm-hmm.
that may play in there as well.
Yeah. An interesting comparisons. How do the younger generation of evangelicals rate when compared to the non and evangelical cohort of the same age?
On valuing diverse friendships?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, they're just about 2 percentage points lower, which isn't at a statistically significant difference.
So roughly the same.
So, and when you look at the idea of solidarity, younger evangelicals actually are more likely than other younger Americans to say that they share a sense of solidarity with these groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's not statistically significant difference, but they, when you look at the numbers, they're a little bit higher for the younger evangelicals than the younger non-evangelicals.
Yeah, so in terms of valuing diversity and racial solidarity, the numbers are essentially equivalent. The one thing I did see that stuck out, and again, it's not quite statistically significant, and for our listeners, that just basically means that we can't attribute it to a non-random or systematic event. But the Hispanic vision or solidarity with racial groups for younger evangelicals tends to be 48%, so roughly half, whereas younger evangelicals are down around 42%. And that's where the biggest gap is. And I just kind of thought, you know, and again, you're doing research in Guatemala, and I've done research in Latin America as well. I know there's been a huge explosion of evangelical religion over the past several decades in Latin America and Pentecostalism specifically. And I'm just wondering to what extent that there's, you know, slightly more favorable attitudes among evangelicals relative to their non-evangelical group just because of contact through missionary work or through shared religiosity.
Yeah, that could be very, very likely because there is a lot of connection there. And I think of with younger evangelicals, many of them have gone to mission trips and most of them go south of the border.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, you know, another place to really make some connections there.
Yeah.
Which could really bump up that number.
And again, we're just speculating here. This is not something that you actually
dive
into.
But it's something to look into.
No, it's one of the things we like to do on this program is not only to provide the answers that we found from research, but ongoing questions for people who want to study this stuff further. So when it comes to differences in terms of race-related public policy, what kind of differences are you looking at there?
Well, basically, I'm not seeing any difference between the older and younger evangelicals on public policy.
Mm-hmm.
So both younger and older support affirmative action, government assistance at pretty much the same rates, and they're all very low. About 15% support for affirmative action for both groups and about 9 or 10% support for added government assistance.
That's substantially lower than what we were talking about here a minute ago, the racial solidarity measures, which were around upper 40%, around 50%, and for valuing diversity, which were up in the 80% plus neighborhood.
Right, yeah. We dropped down from the 80s and 90s, clear down into the teens in some cases, in single digits. So it's a big drop.
And in terms of how these compare to the younger evangelicals compare to non-evangelicals on the issues of affirmative action and government assistance to African Americans. What are we looking at there?
Yeah. The important thing to know is across the board for whites, they're not very supportive, generally supportive of things like affirmative action and government assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But as we compare younger evangelicals to younger non-evangelicals, we see that the younger non-evangelicals have even less support for these two items than would the non-evangelicals. So about a quarter of non-evangelicals would support affirmative action, whereas only 16% of the younger evangelicals would support it. So there is a pretty good gap in there. So, you know, this kind of just points out to me that as you look at the change that may be occurring between generations, the younger evangelicals seem to be more open to relationships, to connecting with people from different racial backgrounds, but they're not open to the whole idea of structural change or changing social policy to address inequality.
Mm-hmm.
So the contact doesn't translate into, you know, a desire for policy change.
Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and before we talk about the policy change, you got some interesting ideas relating to this, let's step back and talk about how younger evangelicals have changed relative to the older generation. What do you think explains this generational shift between the older generation and the younger generation?
There's a number of factors that we could think about that really contribute to the differences that I've found. The first difference I see is maybe not so much young versus old, but people who are from the South, and evangelicalism is very much associated with being from the South, tend to be less support or have less of a sense of solidarity, be less likely to value diversity than those who are not from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And then things like education and higher income levels, those tend to be associated with higher levels of value for diversity or higher levels of a sense of social solidarity. When you're really looking at the comparison between the younger and the older evangelicals, I think two of the key areas are, do you have a wide variety or a diversity of a wide diversity in your friendships? So younger evangelicals who say, I've got a lot of diverse friendships, they're much more likely to value those friendships, to have a sense of solidarity. And that, you know, that's almost definitional. But I guess we can't just assume that. So
now, yeah, actually, I'll stop you right there because that's an interesting point. And you know, the theory that we're working from here, the explanatory relationship here, tends to be if, you know, you're rubbing shoulders with people of different races, of different cultures on a regular basis, you start to find out, hey, you know, these folks are not so bad as compared to, you know, viewing people from afar saying, oh, they dress differently, they eat different foods, that's, you know, that's kind of odd. I'm not really sure if I like those individuals. And so, you know, the basic causal linkage here is that as America becomes more diverse, as we become more integrated in different aspects of our life, younger people are more likely to experience this diversity on a day-to-day basis and to say, yeah, everything's fine in terms of this. Is that kind of what's going on?
Right, yeah. There's basically a whole vein of research in the tolerance literature that's rooted in a contact theory, which means the more contact you have with diversity, the more tolerant you're going to be of diversity in general, and more tolerant you're going to be with the specific groups that you have contact with. So there's some exceptions to that, but as a general rule, that's what people find as they interact more.
Yeah. So what other factor were you going to mention before I interrupted you there?
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's really interesting is I included a variable in my analysis that it asked respondents if they thought, I'll just quote it here, is it fine for Americans to have different lifestyles and values so long as they follow the same rules? And that, at first, kind of seems like an odd variable to include in the analysis, but it actually turned out to be very significant indicator or predictor in most of the models relating to valuing diversity and racial solidarity. That people who said, yeah, it's okay for people to have different values, different lifestyles, as long as they follow the same rules, those people were more likely to support diversity or value diversity and to have a sense of solidarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that variable to be absolutely fascinating, and I think one that really gets at the mental construct or mindset of different generations and such. And you tease this out a little bit more on the paper, whereas older generations might be thinking about, well, I'm only going to interact with people who really share my same values. And if you think of evangelical churches, you know, you better, you know, adhere to the same kind of theology and mm-hmm. value system that I am. Whereas younger generations, it's like, hey, you know, we're a diverse culture, and as long as everybody knows the laws of society, there's the Constitution, this is how we do things in the United States. Yeah, if you have different values, that's cool. That's fine.
Right.
So that's what you're getting at with that, right?
Yeah. And to me, this is the most interesting part of the paper for me as well. Just one, seeing that shift, and two, seeing, you know, the difference that it makes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, traditionally when we think about evangelicals, we think of people who say, if we're going to have a strong society, we believe in this God who has kind of laid out these transcendent moral virtues that have always applied, and we all should be on board with these virtues. And if we're going to have a strong society, we should all agree to that. So there's been traditionally a push among evangelicals to have these shared sense of norms around the Ten Commandments, the Bible, et cetera, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're seeing now is evangelicals, younger evangelicals, are more likely to say, we're not so sure that this is practical, given the pluralism in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some social pressure to say, you know, we're not even sure this is desirable. People should be able to pursue their own values, their own lifestyles, and we just need to set down some rules to make sure that we're not infringing upon each other's rights, and then just let people go their own way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it necessarily means that evangelicals, younger evangelicals, have kind of given up on their basic or their traditional moral values, religious values. Some people say they have, some people say they haven't. But it's clear that they're becoming less and less likely to kind of demand or expect that other people in society would share their same values. And that's affected their interactions.
Yeah, let's go ahead and explore that a little bit more, because you had some really interesting things to say about that at the very end of your paper. I was going to save this for a little bit later in the podcast, but I think it's a good time to bring this up now. I mean, it might have some pretty interesting implications for the theological worldview of evangelicals. And some, as you mentioned, you just hinted at, some people might be thinking that, oh, the younger generation is giving up on their old hardline Great Awakening type fervency of their spirit and becoming a little bit more, you know, theologically mushy, so to mm-hmm. speak. But that it might not necessarily be the case. What are your thoughts on that? Expound upon that.
Yeah, well, I think that the difference is just realizing that we're in this pluralistic society and we can't expect everybody to think like us. So, evangelicals are kind of coming to terms with that, to peace with that. And, you know, that really does have implications moving ahead. Is that going to start to erode the values that has made evangelicals so strong over time? Or will that help them to thrive in their ability to interact with each other, with other people, and accept them? So, you know, this is something that the full implications I really haven't been able to explore, but for my own research going ahead, I really want to dive more into this. And I also want to just do some more qualitative work about asking evangelicals more in-depth questions about how they feel about these types of issues, to get a better sense of what this means and where it's going.
Yeah, I seem to, you know, this brings up in my mind Peter Berger's famous book, The Sacred Canopy, which in many ways he has disowned, but it was a book trying to explain the issue of secularization in society. And one of his central thesis of the book was that as you become more engaged or become more in contact with social diversity, you start to loosen up your own value system, saying, oh, maybe some of these other people are right, and I don't know if mine is. And that definitely, you know, what we're talking about here and how some people might be viewing younger evangelicals is that they are giving up on their theology. They're softening it at the edges and such. But we recently had a podcast with Mark Driscoll of Mars Hill Church, who out here in Seattle, it's a very strong evangelical megachurch that, you know, caters to or has attendance in the tens of thousands of people listening, you know, in services on Sunday, but also through podcasts and stuff. And he really caters to a young audience. And most people have taken a look at that church and see that he has a very, you know, strict version of evangelical Christianity, yet he's able to negotiate these diverse issues. I mean, you look at the attendance in his church, it's very pluralistic. It's very multicultural in that regard. So that would kind of, on the other hand, indicate that Berger's thesis that the theology is going to be softening is not necessarily the case.
Yeah. Well, I think people have a lot of fears about relativism. That
right.
If everybody else is okay, then everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a little bit of a sense of pluralism emerging where it's okay to have differences, but it's also important to own your own values and beliefs and bring them to the table. And then we can dialogue across those areas. You know, we can find out that we actually have some surprising similarities, and then find out that we have some differences that maybe aren't going to change. And we need to find a way to negotiate that, to get along with that, despite those differences. So I think people are seeing the danger of pure relativism and hopefully developing a new way to think about pluralism where they can hang on to their commitments but still engage with others who are different.
And I think that's a great avenue for scholars to explore, because you know, on the surface of it, it seems difficult to reconcile, but people in their daily life seem to be doing it pretty well. So that's something we need to understand a little bit more. In terms of the issue of what I would call remedial action towards racial inequality, you study that, and this is the issue of affirmative action and the issue of welfare assistance or economic assistance toward racial minorities, specifically African-American communities. We mentioned before that the difference between younger evangelicals and younger non-evangelicals is pretty big here. What do you think is going on? Why are younger evangelicals who have seen this shift toward, I'm more accommodating toward racial diversity in my community and everything's fine, I share, relative to non-evangelicals, I share the same kind of solidarity with different racial groups, but yet they score much lower when it comes to supporting affirmative action or supporting economic assistance. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, and this will be, again, just pure speculation on my part, but I do think it has to do with evangelicalism and its broader social outlook. Christian Smith's book on evangelicalism talks about the individualism that evangelicals tend to have, that they think that the best way to change all social issues are individually through one-on-one relationships. That's how we bring about social change. And so to me, it's not surprising that these younger evangelicals are experiencing a big change in their value for diverse relationships, the sense of solidarity that they have with people who are different from them, that relational connection. On the other hand, according to Smith, evangelicals are very, very blind to broader social issues, or I should say structural issues that are causing different inequalities in society. Not only are they opposed to structural change, they tend to not even see these structural issues occurring in society. And so that makes them less likely to look to these as potential problems, and less likely to say, we maybe need to do something about this. So that's kind of my idea as to why there's a difference in these two areas.
Well, there's something interesting about your paper, and I'm going to back this up to another one of the areas that you focus on. When you ask, or when the survey questions ask, to what extent do you think that African Americans are in the circumstances, the dire economic circumstances that they might be? Is it due to, lack of effort on their part? So you ask that question, and you compare younger evangelicals with younger non-evangelicals. And what are you finding there?
Well, the response there is very surprising. And at the end of my paper, I say, I think we need to do a little more work on this, because most other studies that you see will say that, evangelicals are much more likely to attribute racial inequality to a lack of effort or a lack of motivation on the part of minorities. Well, in this study, my findings, they do show a difference, but it's not a significant difference.
Yeah, it's basically 32% of younger evangelicals are saying, well, it's due to lack of effort and it's the problem at the individual level. Whereas compared to non-evangelicals, it's roughly the same, about 28%.
Right.
And as you mentioned, statistically insignificant. There might be some difference there, but again, very, very, very small. And for me, that's kind of interesting, because you compare that young non-evangelicals and young evangelicals are viewing the plight of African Americans through largely the same type of lens here, at least for what we can get through with these questions, but they really differ on the policy responses.
Right.
Now, you throw in issues about politics in there, and that's one of the explanations that you give. We'll elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, well, in previous studies about evangelical ideas about is inequality all due to a lack of effort on minorities' part? When they actually do their studies, they don't include a political variable. They don't include being a Republican, which is often associated with evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
I actually include that in my study, and that turns out to be a significant variable. So I'm just wondering if, you know, not including this political ideology that sometimes goes hand in hand with evangelicalism but is not the same, is often getting conflated there.
And yeah.
It might be an issue.
And that really, for me, it highlights what type of networks you get into and the worldview that you are associated with. I mean, again, we're talking prior to this about how you view racial relations and diversity within the community. And the basic idea is that younger people have more contact with this, as you talk about contact theory. And, you know, so they're fine with it. I have experienced this. It's great. But again, as you note, that evangelicals tend to, on average, be associated more with the Republican Party. So they're going to be associated in those circles, and they're going to be rubbing shoulders with people who have certain policy prescriptions. They're probably going to be adopting those policy prescriptions. So even though different than non-evangelicals, they may share the same worldview on effort, you know, whether or not the problems associated with African-American communities are due to individual effort, they're in a different community. The evangelicals, the younger evangelicals, are in a different political community, which shapes their worldview. So in many ways, our worldviews shape from many different angles.
Right. Well, and as we look at all three of these public policy variables, the affirmative action, government support, and just the idea that it can all be attributed to African-American effort, there's kind of three variables that I think all are intertwined, and it's a little hard to tease them apart, and that's Republican, evangelical, and being from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those come out as being insignificant, or being significant. As you start to play with the models and put them in and pull them out, they dramatically affect the significance levels that occur with the dependent variables.
Mm-hmm. Let me go ahead and wrap up this section on racial attitudes with a more speculative question. And this is one of the things that, you know, you're a graduate student right now, but you'll find out as you move through the profession, we love to get our hard research results, but then we can't help but speculate a little bit beyond this and into the future. And in some cases, it might be a little bit dangerous, but on the other hand, it tends to be rather fun. I'm just wondering how you think all of this bodes for future race relations here in the United States. I mean, there's some concern, growing concern, that race relations have soured recently in the past couple years. And there's always been talk about how Sunday happens to be the most segregated, or Sunday morning happens to be the most segregated time in the United States, whereas, you know, whites go to their churches and blacks go to their churches, and then on Monday they meet and intermingle in the workforce. But you're seeing differences in these younger evangelicals. They're changing their attitudes. They're broadening their social networks. And is this something that you think is going to be beneficial to race relations in the United States, or how are you looking at that?
Yeah, I guess as I look at the whole study more broadly,
mm-hmm.
I kind of see a bit of a mixed bag. That's not surprising from our conversation so far. But, you know, on the one hand, I really think this all bodes really well for the future of race relations, race relationships. I think there's a lot of potential for healing and, you know, even maybe some potential for integration in the pews.
Mm-hmm.
That would be amazing if that would happen. But this is just kind of interesting. As I was thinking about our conversation today, just yesterday at my church, we finished up a six-week series on how your church can be an intercultural church.
Mm-hmm.
A whole series of videos and discussions about the diversity that's occurring in our communities and how churches should respond to that. I know there's quite a few evangelical churches in this region that are working through the same type of curriculum here. So, you know, that tells me that maybe there will be some real potential for improved race relations in evangelical churches, and I think that's really positive. I think that's really an important thing.
And from what you've seen with the attitudes changing of the younger generation, they seem to be the conduit through which this might be occurring.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
and just sitting in the session, a lot of the older people who were in the session were just seemed shocked and surprised that the world was changing in this way. And I think if you had younger people in the group, they would not be surprised at all, because they just see it in their schoolrooms, in their classrooms, and all around them.
Mm-hmm. So, and we had an earlier podcast with Marissa Davis. It aired around December of 2010, where we were talking about these issues. She's specifically talking about African-American families and the role that religion plays there. But near the end of our conversation, we started talking about what roles that churches could play in integrating. And you know, our conversation that we're having here brought up a memory of that, and I kind of thinking about in terms of missionary activity that churches have, especially white evangelical churches. The typical view of missionary activity might be you go to some faraway strange land where they haven't heard, you know, the word of the gospel yet, or you know, they haven't heard anything about Christianity. But really what might be happening is a different type of missionary movement where, you know, churches send out missionaries or emissaries to other churches and integrate just down the block or just across town in that regard. And that might be what you're seeing in your church with the talking about the new intercultural movement to integrate churches in that. Thoughts
right.
on that?
Well, and I think people are seeing their role is to partner and to be support and to work together, not to actually go in, you know, and do the work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And one of the things that came up in my church just recently, we had about 60 to 80 Karen just start coming to our church.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that people found out in our church is that these Karen people who are refugees living in the jungles of Burma, they turned out to be better Christians than we are, as one of the guys said in our Sunday school yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so these are some interesting and surprising revelations that I think are going to change the way that people interact with others from different racial and ethnic groups.
Yeah, the Pentecostalization or the growing Christianization of the world that the most dynamic areas of the Christian church happen to be in those faraway lands, but those people are immigrating to the United States and bringing that Christianity here is really in many ways changing it. And I would imagine that younger evangelicals are the ones who are going to be more open to seeing that and working with that kind of change.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let me, with a few minutes that we have left here, I want to shift gears, because not only have you done work here on the United States and in pulling down data sets that examine racial attitudes here in the United States, but you are focusing your work on Guatemala as well, and you're looking at issues of gender equality and religious education. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with that project.
Yeah, I'm just kind of in the initial stages of my analysis, so I don't have much for results, but My main interest for research is in religion and development, so how faith-based groups do development around the world. And as I look at one area where religious groups, both Christian and Muslim, are highly involved in development work is in education. A huge percentage, well, in Africa, almost half of the schools in sub-Saharan Africa are run by a religious group. But at the same time, a lot of these groups have been pretty much completely ignored by research scholars. Just recently, they're starting to come to realize that these are groups that need some attention. So I'm really interested in seeing what kind of effect faith-based groups have on development. I'm focusing specifically on educational development,
mm-hmm.
and I chose to focus on girls' education because that's a real emphasis in the development community now,
mm-hmm.
Girls' education. And there's kind of a sense that because of paternalistic attitudes, religious groups will not fare as well on girls' education as maybe other groups. So mm-hmm. I'm comparing Catholic, evangelical, and secular schools in Guatemala to kind of compare their outcomes for girls' education. And hopefully that'll give some insight as to the impact that these schools are having on these girls, whether, you know, religion does kind of affect their gender attitudes, their achievement in school, or maybe it has no effect at all.
Mm-hmm. And how far along are you in the research?
Well, I've gathered all my data, visited about 20 schools, and gathered about 1,700 surveys. and I've just recently started some of the analysis. I hope to really be able to focus on it in the next year or so and be finished up next May, but still don't have anything definitive or conclusive to report.
Oh, okay. I was going to kind of prompt you a little bit. I mean, you obviously did field work down there. So mm-hmm. do you have any kind of qualitative impressions as you're going about gathering your data, visiting different schools and such?
Yeah, I kind of suspect that we're going to find that on the whole, there's not a large difference between Catholic, evangelical, mm-hmm. and secular schools on girls' education. I don't really expect to see that having a religious, going to a religious school is going to affect girls' views of themselves or their self-esteem or things like that. There may be some differences here and there, but I don't think we're going to see a real big effect for religion, either positive or negative.
Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of pretty much the same across all those different categories. Well, that'll be something that we take a look at in the future, and as you progress through coding all of your surveys and entering them into your various statistical programs and running the results, we'll kind of check back with you in a few months to see what results you do have, and engage in more speculation about how might this be affecting the world at large. So I want to thank you. We've been talking with Darren Mather today about racial attitudes in the United States, and again, we should be coming soon to Facebook, and Darren pledged that he was going to get a Facebook page and sign us up as a friend, so all you folks can too. Darren, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being on Research on Religion.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Research on Religion. To learn more about today's topic, participate in a discussion about what you've heard, or browse other podcasts, please visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org. And if you like what we're doing, please tell a friend. We'd appreciate the company. See you next week.